This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. When most of us think of archaeologists, we picture scientists working digs in far-off places like Egypt, Greece, or Italy, looking for ancient artifacts. But from the renovation of Washington Park to planning alternate routes for a Brent Spence Bridge replacement and the construction of the banks, the cultural resources management firm of Gray and Pape has been called in to determine the historical significance of the area. Gray and Pape founder Kevin Pape, principal investigator for history and architecture Jennifer Mastery Burden, and outreach coordinator Jay Washington join me to discuss the various archaeological and historic preservation services the firm provides. You can join the conversation. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Thank you all for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's kind of our history theme. We were talking about the colonies. Now we'll move on maybe to a time earlier than that as you folks do your work. Let me start with you, Kevin. This is your company. So how did you decide to set up this company? What in your background said, I want to do this?
Well, my background is anthropology and archaeology. And when I was in graduate school, it wasn't really clear exactly how I would turn that degree into a livelihood.
Were you trying to decide what you wanted to be when you grew up?
I always still am. But at about that time, and so we're talking the late 70s, the National Historic Preservation Act had been passed in 1966, so we're in 2016, we're looking at the 50th anniversary. And that's a federal act that says simply that federal agencies need to take into account their effects or impacts on historic properties, cultural resources. And from that grew this sort of entrepreneurial response. Well, who are you going to call? originally, well, if you needed an archaeologist, you went to a university. Mm-hmm. You're right, that's where they were. But very quickly, there became a need for archaeologists who could work as consultants. And that's where it started. And it started simply and slowly with myself and then my partner, Marcy Gray. And about 24 years ago, we moved to our office on Main Street and over the Rhine and have continued to grow. We now have five offices in our headquarters here and then Indianapolis, Richmond, Virginia, Providence, Rhode Island, and the beachhead in Rabbit Hash, Kentucky.
So how big is the firm now? If it was you and your partner?
We have about 50 full-time staff, and which during the field season is augmented with temporary employees, primarily archaeologists. And this year we're looking at hiring as many as 90 to 100 of those folks to help with the archaeological field work.
And Jennifer or Jay, I'll let you take this question. So obviously, federal money has to be that's one trigger. Federal money has to be involved with the project. But then how do you get involved? So let's say I'm the city of Cincinnati. I have a project, let's say like the banks, that's going to have federal dollars. Where do I begin?
Most times you would put out a proposal or put out a request for proposals that we then discover and then we bid on them like most other types of projects of this nature.
But let's take like the banks, the massive area but between the two stadiums, and I'm assuming maybe there had been some of that work even with the stadiums. But if you're going to take that, you just take the particular sections they're going to start on first, like a block, and do your work in that block?
We look at where the project limits are going to be. And from there, we come up with a plan, especially for above ground work, where we're looking at the built environment. We're not just looking at that particular construction footprint because there are visual impacts that would take in the surrounding area. So once we know the limits of the construction project, and we can go from there and build out from that.
Jay?
For me, I come from a community-oriented perspective. I have less technical background and more background in a community aspect. So for me, it's about in letting the community know what we do. Fortunately for me, I not only live in Cincinnati, but I live in Over the Rhine. And so my joining the organization was very personal in that because I have very limited technical knowledge, it was about engaging the entire community in the conversation of preservation. It was about learning that these organizations exist and that if you're willing to invest a little time and energy as far as listening, you can participate in the process by learning about it.
Let's do some specific projects that I know that you folks are involved in. Let's take the streetcar project. So what's your role in the streetcar project?
Well, for that one, we knew where the streetcar was proposed to go. And so we looked at everything running along the side of the proposed route. And really, because it's mostly in downtown Cincinnati and then into Over the Rhine, a lot of buildings and the histories of those buildings have already been documented. And so we looked at all of that and figured out where the historic districts were, where individual buildings that had already been documented, and synthesized all of that information into a report that was ultimately submitted to the State Preservation Office in Columbus.
And so that one, maybe it's confusion on my part. Now, that one, there wouldn't have been any digs to do because it's just streetcar
right.
rails in the street.
Exactly. So our interest there was to assess the indirect effects. So when you built the electric lines, you build the platforms, all the supporting infrastructure around the streetcar, would those elements somehow detract from significant qualities of the historic district? So we would be asking questions like that and determining whether there would be negative impacts.
One place where there was digging was Washington Park, and you actually uncovered an old cemetery.
Yes, we did.
Two old cemeteries.
Two old cemeteries.
Yeah. There were... It's kind of fascinating because, every urban environment is like a layer cake, starting with prehistory. And in fact, there were extensive earthworks in what is now downtown Cincinnati. But specifically in the area where Washington Park stands today, starting about 1810, there were two cemeteries, one the southern two-thirds of the park belonged to Presbyterians. The northern third was Episcopalian. And that northern third is where the parking garage was planned. So the city and 3CDC knew that history, and we were engaged to conduct excavations. And what's interesting is we do a lot of historical research before we move any dirt to really understand how it was used, and in the case of the cemetery, how it was kind of disengaged or transitioned when the decision was made to no longer support its function as a cemetery. And we actually see a pattern over and over again throughout the Midwest and beyond when we're asked to assess or excavate historic cemeteries, and that is historical record almost invariably says that the remains have been removed. Doesn't always say where they were reinterred or whatever. That was the case with Washington Park. And
so you're saying there that you were told they had been removed, but in fact they were not.
That's right.
Removed.
The historical record would lead you to believe that the church had made good faith effort to identify and remove the remains, because the city was actually looking at using that space for public use, like a park, as early as 1860. But when we started moving dirt and uncovering, it was very clear there were individuals' human remains still in place. And I think the story is that, you know, in those days, communication was difficult. That continuity between families may not have been there, so they didn't know who to contact to move. I think there was probably a financial burden associated with it. For whatever reason, we could document that there were individuals who had been disinterred, moved, and there were others that hadn't.
How hard is it? Oh, go ahead, Jay.
Well, I just, specifically in the Washington Park project, one of the reasons and one of the things that I based my decision on joining the organization was this project. And what I found wonderful and beautiful about what Graham Pape did in this project was the reverence shown. As a community member, there was a lot of conversation about that. And so for me, a huge selling point, if you will, was the idea of reverence and that this wasn't just a project. It wasn't about revitalizing or rebuilding the park. It really was about making sure that there was an acknowledgement of the remains and that they were placed in a place of honor, if you will, in another cemetery and reverence shown. And so for me, that's my role. In translating that information to the community, many were they were set at ease. Their minds were set at ease because it was a real concern. And so Graham Pape is not only here to get the job done, but is also here to make sure that there is integrity.
How much of this is a little bit of detective work to find these documents? And where do you go to find these documents? I mean, I can see maybe like a church that maybe some pastor had the documents and he took them home with him and they're in an attic or in a basement.
Well, for the Episcopal side of things, we lucked out and were able to contact Christ Church, which has a very extensive archive. And I went through the archive there and found documentation about the cemetery itself, how it was intended to be laid out, which helped give us an idea of, as we were excavating, what we could anticipate to find in certain areas. The Presbyterian side of things, the Cincinnati Library actually has some of their old trustees' minutes from that time on microfilm. So I was able to then consult that and figure out how their cemetery plots were sold or not sold in some cases. But it's always detective, definitely. And just start with your everyday resources, including the public library, and see where that takes you. Contact people that you think will have an idea, like Christ Church, and that, you know, got us a lot of information as well.
With the Washington Park and the two cemeteries, had this not been a public space, let's say this was a private development, would the outcome have been different?
Well, I guess part of the answer has to do with what's a legal requirement. Ohio does not have a specific legal requirement that addresses the treatment of an historic cemetery. I would say, by and large, most developers understand the sanctity of a cemetery and they try to do the right thing. Sometimes we're engaged to do remote sensing. A lot of historic cemeteries, the boundaries are unclear. Over time, the headstones may have been lost, removed, whatever. So we do non-destructive remote sensing to
describe how you do that.
So ground penetrating radar or magnetometer surveys essentially use different wavelengths to assess subsurface anomalies. They can be interpreted, and when you have a feature like a grave shaft, they show up on that feedback, and so it's pretty easy to identify where the graves were. And oftentimes in a development, the cemetery can be set aside. Other times, we may be engaged to disinter the remains. But in those cases, it really does come down to that developer's sense of what's appropriate.
Let's talk about another project, the Banks Project. And I believe, if I remember right, I think I maybe even did some stories on this. This is one where you were doing this work, and part of it was opened up to the public to come down and have a look. Am I remembering that right?
You are.
Yes. Yes.
That was a huge success.
Yeah.
And what did you find?
Well, we looked at a footprint of building that was a grocery store and a saloon. Oftentimes, you know, archaeology is it's all about what are the material remains of an occupation and kind of what is the process that that site goes through to preserve those remains. And in this case, some of the subsequent construction down there had removed a lot of the archaeological material. We were able to recover some. I think part of the story was really fleshed out from the historical research, and Jen can speak to that. But we excavated the footprint of the foundation, could see how the buildings were laid out, understood kind of the construction techniques of the buildings, and I was saying that that day of public interest was so successful because lo and behold, there were people who came down that were related to the folks that had originally owned the saloon and the grocery store. So that kind of tangible return to their roots was so powerful. It was a very emotional experience.
Did you want to add some of that, Joy?
Well, I just find it fascinating, again, as sort of a layman, if you will, to be able to connect through stories. Your previous guest really enchanted me with the idea of this connection through stories. And so this opportunity for me presents the opportunity, as Kevin mentioned, to hear the stories, to have, you know, future generations be able to connect, to share that connectivity with the city, and then be able to share that broadly with the rest of us. I was talking to Jen before we were on air, and we were talking about some of the things found. A wine glass, you know, to be able to go back in time and see, you know, or think about wine here, where, what sort of people, was it a family dinner, was it a fancy party? Just the idea of connecting further with the history of the city.
Jen?
One thing that I thought was very lucky on that project is we found a photo of the building, which is really unlikely, considering that block was demolished, I want to say 1904, so definitely very early 20th century. And before they demolished those buildings, a photographer was hired to photograph most of the built environment. And the really cool thing is the photo of the building in particular that we excavated. You can actually see somebody in one of the windows, so the building itself wasn't vacant yet. And so you zoom in really closely, and there's a woman holding a child in one of the upper story apartments. And that was just something that we don't find every day. And it was really neat.
When you talk about the excavating, how much of this is, and I'm sensing doing it by hand, what's digging by hand versus mechanical? With when I say mechanical, like a backhoe, bulldozer, or something like that.
Right. And so it's the right tool for the right purpose. A lot of times we do use mechanical equipment when we understand the stratigraphy of a site, and so some of the near surface deposits are fill. They're not part of the archaeological record per se, so we can take those out in bulk with mechanical equipment, and then we shift to hand labor. And I mentioned earlier about engaging archaeological technicians to help us, because archaeology by its nature is labor intensive. At some point you're going to get your hands dirty, you know.
Yeah.
And then how far down do you go?
Well, we did a project at the Willow Island Lock and Dam for a hydroelectric facility.
And that's located
up up the Ohio River, not too far from Marietta. And on the West Virginia side, it was at the confluence of another stream. That confluence with the Ohio River set up an environment where alluvium, in other words, flood deposits, built up over time. And we excavated a footprint, a block, that went down almost 30 feet below surface. So we had to work with engineers to put the right kind of shoring in place and so forth. But it was an amazing layer cake of human occupation. But other places, you have near surface sites where you're only going down maybe 18 inches or something.
What another project that you've got is the Brent Spence Bridge Replacement Project. What work have you done so far on the Brent Spence Project?
For the history architecture side, we surveyed everything from on the Ohio side and into Kentucky. I forget how many miles total that was. And that was because some of that, it's not just the bridge, that there's going to be some other work involved with the interstates, especially on the Kentucky side. So we looked at a larger footprint of buildings down there for visual impacts as well as some direct impacts. And all of that work is complete. And then for the archaeology side, that hasn't occurred yet, or at least some of it's occurred, but not, it's not complete until work begins.
So one of the things that we do for these kinds of projects on the archaeology side is modeling. So we take different variables. Part of it is the historical record. Part of it is an understanding of kind of the evolution of the landscape, what changes have occurred over time, and put that together and come up with a model that sort of drives to where are the locations where we think putting some effort into the archaeology would yield the most significant and important stories. And that's really what that's the work that we have done so far with Brent Spence.
We mentioned the federal requirements in general, the need for this if you're getting federal funding, but are developers today, do they have a better sense for preserving history, say now, than they used to?
Well, I laugh because I can tell you, in the earliest days working as a consultant in this area, I spent a lot of my time explaining why we do what we do, why the poor developer has to, comply with these laws, what's important about archaeology. I don't do that at all anymore. So to your point, I think that it's become kind of the normal course of developing projects. And I think that this sort of trend toward social corporate responsibility is helping to inform developments with the importance of our heritage and our past. One of the areas where we were very active is in supporting archaeological work that's being done for shale gas development. There is an initiative in that area called the Gas and Preservation Partnership, which seeks to find balance between the interests of energy development and treatment preservation of our heritage.
Just real quickly, in about 10 seconds, is this something, you talk about your seasonal help, is this something that a layperson could be involved in this project, or do they need some sort of specialized training?
We look for people with specialized training.
We have been discussing the cultural resources management firm of Gray and Pape. It's been called in to determine the historical significance of our area. My guests were Gray and Pape founder Kevin Pape, principal investigator for history and architecture Jennifer Mastery Burden, and outreach coordinator Jay Washington. You'll find links on our website, wvxu.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. Here and Now is coming up next on WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman.